and welcome to the Biz Talk podcast, where I have the honor of speaking to some of the world's best entrepreneurs who are doing work that matters and changing the world one person at a time. My name is Charlene, and let's dive in.
Hello, Miss Adrienne. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Dre's just finishing up a Clubhouse chat real quick. He said he'll be in just a sec, and we're just waiting on Candace, but we all jumped in a little early anyway. Look at us being prepared.
Look at us on time.
Hello, hello. Can y'all hear me?
I can. Yeah. Hey, Dre. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you two doing?
Doing pretty good, actually. Here's where we are right now. I had individual conversations with Adrienne about what she does and what she's looking to do for her business, which is to attract more diversity into her business, not just for children, which of course is very welcome, but she's actually really looking to key in on diversity for employees and how can she make a more inclusive, diverse environment for them. So her and I were going to do this in-depth talk about her business. And she came back and said, would it be all right if you asked Dre and Candace if they'd be willing to join us? Otherwise, it's just basically two white women talking about diversity. And we don't know if we really have the right to do that. So I said, okay. I had a moment where I paused and I thought, I don't know if I get to ask that. In this climate, I actually don't know what I get to ask at all anymore. So I'm showing up here with a genuine interest in having an open conversation, even if the topics can get a little tricky. And I'm asking for you both to treat me as though, to accept that I am just showing up like that. I'm not showing up with any preconceived notions or any assumptions. I may ask some pretty stupid questions, but I feel like this is a safe place to do it. So I just want to do that. Now that's my side. Adrienne, you and I talked about after I said that, you'll go ahead and take it from here. So why don't you explain where you're coming from and why this idea even came about?
Yeah.
Can I say something really quick before you start?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Adrienne, to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
First of all, I think you both probably know, I am not a sensitive type of individual, number one. Number two, I am not into a lot of the woke shit that is going on these days. I'm really not into a lot of it. So, and number three, there are no stupid questions. All right, so the stupidest question is the one that you don't ask. And the reason why I would assume we have these kind of conversations is so that you're talking to someone who comes from a different background, but you can ask those quote unquote stupid questions and we can talk about them. We can openly talk about this stuff. And that's the reason why I agreed to doing this, because there are so few people. I actually wrote an article about this today. So few people willing to have these conversations, even people of the same race, because they feel so uncomfortable of asking or saying the wrong thing. So there are no topics off limit here today. Ask me anything and everything.
Wow. Thank you, Dre. Wow. All right. Jeez. I already feel better.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. How about you, Adrienne?
I really appreciate how you show up, Dre. Like you are such a role model for all of us to be authentically yourself. Yeah. And that's why you came into my mind, you and Candace came into my mind to invite, because I felt safe asking my stupid questions, you know? So I really appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for your extreme patience. We had a little bit of a run-in here at home today that we are sorting out. You'll hear a lot of banging and clanging in the background.
Interestingly enough, we all approached this discussion with a very open mindset, a willingness to have an honest dialogue about some of these pretty tough topics. But I would be remiss if I didn't admit I was a little more nervous than I expected. And at this point in the conversation, I could even feel myself just sort of taking a breath and getting prepared to dive in. The reason was, I didn't want to offend any of these people. I respect them. They're all tremendous entrepreneurs, and what they do or who they help is incredible. So it did make me wonder in my mind, one more time, do I have the right to ask the questions that I want to ask today? Well, here's how it went.
So at the height of the summer, when all of this was going on, and I was thinking about what can we do? How can we contribute to help this be a more equal situation where everyone has a fair chance, you know, to lead the lives they want to without fear. And so I'm watching CEOs on their various social media channels trying to contribute, trying to add their voice to it, and they're just getting raked over the coals because they don't have diversity in their leadership or on their team in general or on their stages and what have you. And so I was sitting there thinking about my business and the evolution of businesses in general, and how when you're growing so rapidly and you're building out your leadership team, without your intention, you do end up building a leadership team with people who live close to you. So I was looking at like ClickFunnels, for example, and Russell Brunson's company. It's headquarters in Boise, Idaho. And Idaho is like 93% white population. So I sympathized with Russell because he's building out this team. That's who he has access to close by, is mostly white people, white men specifically, right? And how hard is that? Because he's building this company. If he was to attract diversity, can you imagine, Dre, you're from Philly, him hiring someone of color to come work for his company and they have to relocate their family?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think number one, it depends on the person. It depends on that person. If they're a person who has traveled, who is comfortable around white people, hey, maybe they'll love the job. Maybe they are a computer geek at heart, but because they come from a certain environment, and maybe because they're tall, everybody told them they should play basketball. Maybe because they're from the hood, they think they need to be a rapper. But if they get exposed to something else, then maybe they would be wide open to it, and they don't feel discomfort being around a whole lot of white people, you know, just because they happen to be black. And at the same time, with somebody like Russell, I'm curious as to why you say you sympathize with him. Last time I checked, looked like he was doing pretty well with all those white guys and they're at that company. So I don't think he's looking around like, hey, damn, I don't have any black people, we're messing up. I think he's like, listen, we're doing business. And the purpose of business is to create the exchange. So I don't think it really has anything to do with the color of the people working there. I think it's about, are we giving value to our customers?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's to my point, right, Dre? Like, he was getting raked over the coals. He was one of the people I noticed. People were really upset about the way his company was built. And in reflection, I'm thinking, you know, I don't know that many entrepreneurs think about that, about having that diversity in their company. And so that's what's, you know, struck up those thoughts for me and my company I'm trying to build. And I want to be part of the solution and giving opportunities. And so that's why I posed the question a few months back about attracting diversity to my team, because we work all remotely at home. So it doesn't matter where you live. You just have to work in a state I can hire in. And I would love to start making sure people feel safe, that I would be an employer that they'd want to work with, right? And so that's where it's really difficult, because I know, again, like you said, Dre, some people are more sensitive than others about this. And so how do I position myself as a company to make my what I have to offer to employees something attractive to all people and not just white female teachers, if that makes sense?
Let's take this to Candace. What do you think there, Candace?
I'm coming from a little bit of a different perspective, and I find myself in the middle of the two extremes. So Adrian, for example, you mentioned that Russell was being raked over the coals, and you know, a lot of people were upset about what it was that they uncovered when they realized, okay, you know, this is the location he's in. I would want to know more about where all of these people are being hired for. I'm sure not everyone he's working with, well, I can't even say I'm sure. Let's just put that on out there, okay? But there's questions like, is everyone on his team from Boise? You get where I'm coming from. Does he have anyone that he works with remotely? And the reason why a lot of people would be upset is because it's an afterthought for a lot of people in business. And business, while it is about the transaction at the end of the day, the transaction doesn't happen without properly relating to people. And that is what everyone who is very upset or even emotional finds themselves having a problem with, that it's so much of an afterthought that things like this are happening, which perpetuates the emotion and the frustration with it being an afterthought. Like if we're going into the transactions, remembering at the end of the day, we're serving people, then we're thinking of issues that we contribute to as business owners, serving people with diversity and inclusion or creating equity. And while at the end of the day, someone like myself is like, I understand how it could be overlooked. And then I understand how it shouldn't be overlooked. Again, people are looking to move to what's default for them, the extreme of you should know better. And the person is sitting there like, I didn't even know. And then you've got the other people who are like, well, you know, understand where they're coming from. And this was their normal. And the thing is, it needed to be talked about. And now that it is, something can be done. And that's what everyone is upset about, that it's something that's not being talked about and it's keeping a lot of people out of opportunities and a number of other things that come with that. So that's my perspective on the matter. I understand where everyone is coming from. And then I would want to know more about, you know, the company, you know, are they looking to remedy this? Does this really matter to them? Because people at the end of the day, they want to know that the people they're working with or giving money to actually have character and are thinking of how they're impacting everyone at large. They want to know what we stand for, what we stand against. And so when these types of things come up, you know, it just spotlighted that so many people were in business just for the business, which still, again, perpetuates a lot of ideals and ideas that hurt additional people over time. So I feel there's a lot more to unpack, and it's not just, oh, well, I understand where this person is coming from. It's the collective. It's let's look at how all of this is affecting everyone and everything. And you're going to come across people who really don't give a damn. And then you're going to have those who are going to be like, well, as long as we continue to not give a damn, this is what's going to continue to happen over a specific span of time.
With what Candace just said, and like she said, as you said, Candace, that you're kind of in the middle of it. You can understand the extremes. The part that, and I said this before you hopped on the call, Candace, is that when people say something like, all right, look at Russell and ClickFunnels and they have all these white people, let's say they're 99% white. I don't understand the concept of something needs to be remedied. It's not a sickness. Right? They are a business. And as an owner of a business, you hire who you want to hire. Business is not an equal opportunity game. All right? Whoever you want to hire, you hire. And if it's working, it's working. I don't believe that it's some type of failure of society or a failure of a company if a company doesn't have X number of this color or X number of this color. Like that's been tried since the 60s and it does not work. It's been proven that this doesn't work when you play the identity politics game in that way. So I really don't see, I didn't see Russell getting raked over the coals, but obviously it happened. I'm sure it did. I don't really pay too much attention to a lot of that stuff. But the thing is, like, what does he owe somebody? Like, I'm black. I use ClickFunnels. I love it. All right. I would give them a ringing endorsement. And I don't think they're doing anything wrong as far as that part goes. So that's the part that I really, ever since this whole, all the social justice stuff started last year, or at least when it flared up last year, I never really connected with.
I think that's absolutely valid and agree. You know, when we have our perspectives, they belong to us. And this is why it's really important for us to remember that our perspective isn't everyone's. And again, as long as everyone is more zeroed in on the way they perceive a matter, it continues to contribute to the lack of what's happening with the collective. And yeah, you mentioned something that was very interesting about, you know, from the 60s till the present day about how it hasn't worked. And I will say that what I'm perceiving about why it hasn't worked is because we haven't gotten to the root of what's going on systematically and how a lot of things have not been torn down or set up in a way where change would work, additional to all of the other cumulative issues that surround what's happening at the root and why that would affect change or lack of change. So now we're in a climate where there's a great deal of things that are shifting. Perspectives and ideals. And again, all the things I mentioned before, you know, that do not need to be repeated again, that would potentially change how everything is being done because people are understanding how this is contributing in a way that most probably didn't have the capacity to even receive prior to George Floyd or a lot of other things.
So Dre already alluded to it, which was a perfect segue into this question. I'm looking at a business. I'm looking at Adrienne's business. And she is saying that she wants to open the doors to diversity. Well, on the surface, one could argue that that is a buzz phrase right now. I mean, because it's just because it is a hot topic. So I suppose if I was looking at that as a white person looking to apply to work for her or to enroll my white child into her program, that to me would be it. To me, it would be a virtue signaling. She's just over there running her mouth because she's wanting to say the most popular things. I mean, this is the dialogue that I have in my head when I look at this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I see this. If I didn't know her, that it would stop there. But because I know her, I also know where she's coming from. And okay, she's going to put a job opening out there or say, I want more diversity in the children that are enrolled in my program. What is she supposed to do when the majority of the applicants are white? Like, it's not like she can just take those resumes and knock on doors and say, are you white? Okay, then never mind. Are you white? No. Okay. You know, so what is she supposed to do there? I'll start with Dre and then Candace and then Adrian. I'd love to hear your thoughts too. And I'm going to mute for a while.
Just thank you for explaining how I feel too, Charlene. That's exactly. I don't want to be yuck about it, but I want to provide opportunities to those who want to work, that want to show up and be part of the awesome growth that we're experiencing. And yeah, of all people, you know, it doesn't matter necessarily what color their skin is, but I want to make that available. I want them to view us as an option for them.
So if I'm understanding the question correctly, Charlene and Adrian, it's you want to have more diversity as far as your clients and students go, but the challenge is you're getting a lot of homogenous applicants. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
And what are you supposed to do?
Yes, correct. The applicants, you don't always know the skin color even when they apply.
Right. So the answer to the question is you're supposed to serve your business, which means serve the people who you are called on to serve. The people that you're called on to serve are white, and applicants, you don't even know who they are. You're doing a blind application process and accepting the people who are applying and are qualified, and they happen to turn out white, then that's just the way that it happened. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Again, I understand it's your question, but I'm posing it right back to you. What are you supposed to do? Do you turn down some people who are qualified and would really be really great for your program because they're white, and then try to shoehorn in some people who wouldn't be great and are not quite qualified just so you don't get raked over the coals like Russell Brunson and others have? Again, to me, that is when you get into playing the identity politics game, and it doesn't help you. It does not help the people that you are forcing into a place that they don't belong. The only people it satisfies are the people out there making all the noise and barking about it, but they're not getting anything from it. They're not running your business. They're not the ones who are coming in as clients or students. It's kind of like I don't even know what to call it. It's this cacophony of noise that is only serving the people that are making the most noise, but is not actually helping the people that it's supposed to be quote unquote helping, and is definitely not helping you.
Yeah. So let me clarify one thing about that is, yes, whoever's qualified, you know, would get the job. Doesn't matter what color their skin is or their gender preference or, you know, their sexuality preferences. None of that matters. What I'm trying to say is, what visual signals, what words do I use to encourage someone, a person of color or someone that identifies as female, whether male or whatever it is, whatever that diversity is for them? What signals can I put out there in the world that would make them feel like this is a safe company for me to work for? That's my better question for you, Dre. It's not that I'm going to turn them away. If they're white and they're female, that's not it at all. It's just, how can I present the company in a way that says, we're a great employer. This is a safe place for you to be.
Just a clarifying question, Adrian, why do you even need to do this?
I guess I view my business as a vehicle for also changing some of the wrongs about education. Educators are not paid well. So one thing that we do is we share profits with our teachers here. teachers rewarded for the amazing work that they do. And so I was looking at this as an opportunity to, again, show what's possible in business.
That's interesting. I think, so you're talking about the employees, people to come work for you, not necessarily the students. As far as the words go, I think, well, one thing I'm sure you know about doing the avatar interviews and talking to people who may be qualified or may fit what you're looking for, maybe that's what we're doing right now, I suppose. But to answer your question, I think you put out the business as the business is, and I think the right type of people will come in and find you, number one. And if they happen to be a person of color, then excellent, and that will help serve what you're looking for here. But at the same time, I don't think, and this may be a higher level point that I'm making, but you asked me to come on here, so I'm going to make the point.
Yeah.
I don't think this needs to be the most important thing for you, that if your business is working and you are serving people and they're getting results and you are helping yourself, you're helping the people who work with you. I don't believe that just because you have a certain mix of certain colors that you need to go do something, so to speak, to, you know, make things right by bringing in people of color just for the point of bringing in people of color. I don't think that game is a game that needs to be played. I don't think it helps you. And I also don't think it helps the people that you may be aiming to help.
So if I could chime in really quickly, right? Dre, you cracked me up when you said you want to shoehorn some people. You know, you don't want to have to do that. That is such a powerful statement to make. And to that end, what I wanted to ask Adrian to be more specific is, when you're thinking of your overall vision and mission for your company, that is what I'm picking up that you're looking to clarify, so that it allows other opportunities for whomever these people are to become big believers, you know, co-creators, if you will, in the work that you're doing. And what I wanted to add to that is that, you know, marketing isn't an exact science, just the same way hiring is it. And the way we create a very distinct path for someone to follow us on or to join us on whatever greater mission we're on is to make where we stand known. You know, so like Dre said, I agree. Part of what Dre said is what I agree with when he was specifically talking about, you know, how you put the work out there, and then that's what allows someone to make the decision about whether they want to apply or be a part of the greater mission of what you're doing. And when you had a moment where you were talking about, you know, teachers and the work that they do not being respected, that's very, you know, mission, vision driven. You know, from what I'm discerning, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're looking to make education a more level playing field and to do things in a way that affects everyone that's struggling and not a specific demographic, then those are the things that need to be made known in your marketing, in your hiring. You know, we as a company, you know, here at Made for Math are here to empower people too. And then you fill in the gap. You know, this is what we represent. This is what we stand for. And in essence, you repel those who do not believe in those things and are really just looking for a quick one-off solution to, you know, hey, you know, fix my kid with math. And you start attracting those who are more involved in the process and value community and all of the other things it appears that you value as the leader, the ambassador of your brand and business, you know, that really matter to you or at the core, you know, the center of what it is that you're doing. So that would be what I would want to ask. You know, when you think mission and vision, is this the direction you're going in? And if it is, then that's what you would weave in. If it isn't, you know, as we continue to talk, that will become clear.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Yeah, you've captured my vision, Candace. Yes.
Great. Then it's really just a matter of, again, you making it known that this is what we want to do as a company. And then everything that Dre said was spot on. You put that out there, people encounter the information, they see you doing the work, and then they decide for themselves, this is what I want to be a part of. And whether it happens to be a great deal of white or black or brown or yellow people that come your way, that's something you're not in control of. And I think that the way some people have been attacked or treated in this capacity is what produces a great deal of fear around this, that we start adopting this mentality and we take on the heavy emotion of, well, I'm responsible for what people choose to do once I've made myself known or what I want to do. And that's something we need to relinquish. And that's when we start moving into feeling like we need to, and we may be doing it unknown, okay? We start moving into virtue signaling and a number of other things that we're trying to avoid. When you've done your part, then you relinquish what happens on the back end of that. And that also, again, you know, fuels a lot of the fear of why people don't want to have these, you know, conversations or to really dig deep, because they're terrified of what's going to come on the back end of finding out they really are serious, which is why I was asking about your mission, versus someone who's just like, I just want to wave a Black Lives Matter flag or this type of color flag or that kind of ideology so people can believe, oh, I'm good and I'm one of you and I want to do the right thing. No, there's a distinct difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Candace, you have a way with words. I don't. Math is my forte. Mm-hmm. Which is why I fumble through these conversations. So I appreciate you putting words to the emotions and vision that I have.
Good. I'm glad to help any way I can. Marketing and sales is my thing. So that's always incredibly validating. But that was one of the reasons why I wanted to participate as well. Like, what is the real mission behind everything? And then, you know, then you have, it's much easier to go, okay, this person is in it. They're not looking for any, you know, inappropriate, having this conversation is proof that you're committed and not just like, well, I'm just going to do this for this reason. So I'll just encourage you to run with it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Definitely not looking for pats on the back. I see an opportunity I can do better, I guess, is at portraying the goal of the company.
All right. So far we've gotten, actually already covered several grounds. I've taken notes for myself as well. While we have this opportunity, let's just go deeper, because why not? Dre, you mentioned we're doing avatar interviews. Apparently that is what we're doing. So a question that I have as an entrepreneur looking to hire, if I hire somebody who is Black, what, if anything, do I need to understand about the Black Lives Matter movement to begin with? Is that even relevant in hiring them and the culture that I create? Whoever wants to tackle that first, go for it.
I'll let Candace go first because I'm laughing.
I'm laughing too. Oh my gosh. No, you know, so to be transparent, okay, not every Black person believes in the Black Lives Matter movement. Let's just start there. Okay. And in the event that is where you find yourself aligning as a leader, you're already doing a great job of determining, okay, how do I create an environment where they feel protected, respected, you know, and not like, you know, I'm like, again, waving my Black Lives Matter flag in any capacity. And, you know, they're sitting there side eyeing me, you know, knowing, you know, picking up on all these cues. And, you know, so first things first is to understand that, you know, there are a lot of things socially that affect someone in a work environment, okay? When these types of topics come up, people tend to shy away from them or default to a level of communication and leadership that makes sense to them as the leader. And it completely disrupts an opportunity to listen and get feedback. And the good leaders are those that walk into any environment, any business, you know, in any capacity, and they're thinking of being of service to those that work with them instead of just, you know, bringing this person on. And again, well, look, I've hit my quota. We've hired enough Black people this month. You know, like, as long as you're not coming across from that particular stance, you know, remember, we're human. We're human, and it just happens to be a part of who we are. It's not something that we're looking to be outright identified as, you know, so you want to have policies that are clear about, you know, discussing these types of things and race and identity so that there is safety in that capacity. And then you just want to be really careful about when these types of discussions and things come up, you know, make sure the playing field is level, and that if something needs to be discussed in a certain capacity, you know, that we're not tackling issues with, you know, for Black women, this is huge, our hair, you know, or the way we carry ourselves or being referred to in certain, you know, these are the things that even if we took away color would still affect someone's feelings. And that helps us to empathize in a whole different way. Like, if I were to walk into work and start talking about my white coworker's hair, she'd be sitting there with all these question marks over her head. Like, what's happening here? Okay. So if we take color away for just a moment, and I'm not in any way advocating that we pretend we're colorblind, and, you know, just no, that's not the answer either. But if we take those things away and just think about empathizing with people on a personal and social level and how awkward that can be, period. It makes us more sensitive about the discussions we're having. And then at the end of the day, we're still here to work, okay? Like, we are here to get things done. And so having a standard that is aligned for everyone across the board and the way we communicate and connect with each other takes a lot of the issues off the table to begin with, and making someone clear on that as they come into this environment, that these are the things we protect, helps to, you know, deal with that straight away.
Makes sense.
Candace is really good at this, I must say.
Yes, she is.
So I think one of the things that Candace said there that I want to emphasize is that no matter what color somebody is, they're people. And I'll give you an example. Like my girlfriend, for example, sometimes I'll ask her, she goes out, you know, she's outside without me. I say, well, what do you do when a man approaches you and you can tell he's interested, but you're in a relationship? How do you deal with that? Do you just say to him, hey, I got a boyfriend, don't say anything to me? She says, no, I talk to him as if he's a human being first. I'm just because I'm a female attracted to men and he's a man attracted to women doesn't mean that we have to put no intimacy on the front row of the conversation. It's still a human talking to a human. So even if it's a white person talking to a Black person, you're still a human talking to a human. And like Candace said, we're here to work. We're not here about specifically that. We're here to do the work. So let's focus on what we're actually here for. And the other thing is, the first thing Candace said in her answer is not all Black people agree with Black Lives Matter, period. And there now we got all these different denominations of it. So now people are like, well, I like the hashtag and the movement, but not the organization, or I'm with the organization, or they changed up their wording on their about page. And so now you got all these different angles to which people are even talking about it. So I think for you, and this is something that, you know, I talk about just with my focus being on mindset, is that if you come into it as a white person talking to a person of color and you're afraid of broaching the topic, or you're afraid of saying the wrong thing, or you're afraid of offending somebody, or you're afraid of, you know, getting, you know, put out there on social media as, you know, possibly racist, et cetera, that's actually when it happens. That's what I've usually happens when you're afraid of it and you're afraid of broaching those topics. And I think it would be fine to just go to that person and find out, ask questions, like Candace said, ask questions, find out where they stand on it, where, how they feel about it in the workplace. How do you feel about working with a white person as your boss and you're Black? And ask them straight up and let them tell you how they feel. And when they see that you're willing to talk about it, that you're willing to address it and willing to address it on the front line, then they can stop having that, if they have it, that veneer of, oh, I'm Black and this person's white. They can let that go. The same way that when a woman who's not available is talking to a man, if both of you are kind of dancing around it and nobody's really saying what's happening, the nonverbal conversation, then it becomes this big elephant in the room. But if you two can just talk about it directly, or just talk to each other as humans and not make the conversation about that, then everybody becomes more comfortable. But is when it's being avoided, that's when it becomes an issue.
Well, then, yeah, here's the epiphany. Dre, that was the perfect analogy, because as soon as you started talking about that, I'm like, well, I am that woman, and that all of us ladies have been there. Yeah, what do? I treat him like a human. But here's the key. I do not, that's not my go-to in this climate when I'm talking to a Black person. Or it's still not my go-to either when I'm talking to an LGBTQ person, because I put that first in my head. There is a shield there where, like, alarm, alarm. And now you are right. I'm no longer approaching this person as a human by default. I'm approaching them as a threat. If I say the wrong thing here or do the wrong thing, it's going to end negatively. And I forget the human nature on that. So, wow. Thank you for that epiphany. That was eye-opening. Adrian, would you like to ask another question? Because I have a ton of tough questions, but I don't want to get off course on anything you want to ask too.
Oh, no, you're doing such a great job moderating this. I think I'm just taking notes over here and being a leader of a diverse team, that is encouraging to hear because that's how I operate in my life. So thank you for saying that out loud. Obviously, I'm learning a lot. I don't have a ton of questions, Charlene. I'm just so curious what's going to come out of your mouth next.
Is that your nice way of saying, no, you're doing great. I'm going to give you more rope.
You're doing great, Charlene.
All right. Then the next question is, what is it? I really want to know, what is it like to be the only Black person in a room? And I don't know how young either one of you were when this happened, but what is that like? And why is it such a thing in your words?
I love these questions. Candace, you want to take it?
You're good, Dre. You got this one up to bat first. I'll follow.
All right. So I grew up in a community. I grew up in a neighborhood that's 99% Black. But my mom, I said this at the beginning of the conversation. I don't think Candace was on when I said it. But my mom's an educator. So she was really big on, I'm not letting my kids go to neighborhood schools their whole life. So I went to the neighborhood elementary, but she was like, I went to that neighborhood middle school. You're not going there. So she fought tooth and nail to get my sister and I, my sister's a year older than me, into a magnet middle school in the center of Philadelphia. And it was probably about 60% white. So that was my first experience being around white people, but there were other Black kids in the room. So I had early experience being around white kids, but again, we're talking the 80s here. So it wasn't really a big thing. It was no whole racial situation hanging in the air above anybody's heads. But fast forward into today as an adult, I would say that I have an eclectic background. I've been to 9 different countries playing basketball. I went to college at Penn State, which is, it's all white. There's Black people, but it's mostly white. 100,000 students, I would say 80,000 of them are white. So I was already comfortable being around white people. I'm comfortable being around people from all different places. I live in downtown Miami, which is a melting pot. Nobody who lives here is from here. So I've always just been around a lot of different types of people. So I never feel uncomfortable in a room full of white people. And as a matter of fact, and I said this when I was the guest on the mastermind call last week, and Candace took off right from this point when I said it, was I actually take advantage of the fact that I'm the only Black guy in the room. I take advantage of that because if I walk into a room full of Black people, they're like, all right, well, I've seen a 6'4 Black guy before who played basketball. That's not new. But if I'm in a room full of Charlene's and Adrian's, they're all looking at me a little bit extra because they never seen something like this. They're like, all right, who is this guy? I actually use that to my advantage, but you do have to be comfortable being in that room. And this is what I just touched on in the last answer, is that the Black person, the one person in the room who's different, if you are uncomfortable, people can sense that discomfort. No, most communication is nonverbal. So if you're the one white person in a room full of Black people and you're uncomfortable about that fact, people can read right through everything that you say and they are seeing that more than anything else. And the same thing vice versa. So the fact that I'm comfortable being around people who don't look like me and I don't make it a big deal, I'll even bring it up. I'll make a joke about it and say, all you white girls look the same. And everybody will laugh because the way that I say it. And they know that I'm comfortable with that. And that allows everybody to relax. The tension is completely gone. And now they accept, all right, this person understands they're the only Black person in the room, but they're not making a big deal out of it. I won't make a big deal out of it. And everybody can live happily ever after.
I love it. What say you, Candace?
So very, very, very similar to where Dre is coming from. I don't immediately walk into the room thinking, I am surrounded by all of these white people. And again, that also lends itself to environment, right? I was a gifted child and grew up in the project here in New York. And the thing is, the project was surrounded by a predominantly white community. So as long as we were inside the project, that was the experience. But the moment I came out of it to go to school and do a number of other things, that was where things clashed. So I have a little bit, there's a little more nuance there for me. I had both environments playing music, you know, which helps me again to navigate both. But I'll speak, it's a little bit different as a woman as well. You know, men tend to have the capacity to not let a lot of their environment really affect, they're very logical about, you know, this is just the way it is. Whereas someone like myself, being a young Black woman who was gifted, growing up in these environments and then a full-blown empath, my experience and the way I absorb things was different. So as a kid, I was pretty oblivious. I did not have a lot of experiences that colored the way I viewed the world, you know, everything. And I was very much into sports as well, track and a number of other things. My coach was this boisterous, loud, constantly yelling, super loving white Jewish man. Okay. Like, and he was everything to me. And it was a massive group of Black girls that he was always coaching, you know, so there was that. And then there were my teachers, you know, now, mind you, I was in the gifted program and it was different. It was different. The way I would talk to some of my friends and then hear some of my, I could hear it in the halls and you know how it is, you know, some of the teachers yelling, right? And I'm like, that was not my experience. And it could have been because there was this difference about the way I was coming up and the way I absorbed information and was in the world that colored that, you know? So it's very easy for me to be in that space. But as I grew older and started coming into different environments, that was when I started to experience like, wait a minute, they look at me differently here, you know? I'm gonna break it all the way down for you right now. So
thank you.
That was the shock for me, you know, whereas a lot of other Black women and men and their experiences, they already knew the difference from childhood. I'm like, that was not mine. So my very first job, I moved to Miami and lived in Miami for almost 12 years and just came back to New York a few years ago. And my very first job was working as a court advocate, representing abused and neglected children. For an organization that was predominantly white. And everything from now, because I grew up in both environments, code switching is a thing for me. Okay. Like if I'm talking with my boys on the block, that's one thing. But when I'm in at work, you know, it's very matter of fact. And that's just something that's a part of my experience as well. You know,
I'm sorry, just real quick. What do you mean by code switching? Is that just
okay? All right. But code switching essentially is, you know, I can talk in slang whenever I'm with people who, you know, reflect that part of my experience, or I'm back in the hood, as you may have heard. Well, some people hear me say it, you know, depending on who's going to come across this particular recording, if you will. And that's what comes naturally to me in that environment. But when I'm in a school environment or I am at work, the language shifts. And it's something that a lot of times I don't even realize I'm doing. It's very matter of fact. I'm using proper grammar. And you'll see that there's some Black people who don't do that. They're just like all slang all the time, or they're all very proper. That all colors. And this is why our experience needs to have, you know, room made for it, because it's just different. We're not a monolith, you know? So in that respect, that's what code switching is. It's okay. Being able to, you know, switch how you're communicating depending on the people you're around and the environment you're in.
Huh. I've never had to do that. Okay.
Right. And so long story short, this very first job that I took on, I learned very quickly that people were bothered by how competent I was without training. You know, and I'm assuming that comes from a lot of different, and it's not all white women. And I've mentioned this to you before, Charlene, that I have some beautiful people in my life who happen to be white.
Yeah, I love the way you said it. It was really nice the way you said it.
Right. That's the way I look at it. And then I have people who carry themselves like they are white people and they're not, and, you know, a part of my immediate circle. And so I like to create that distinction because not everybody runs with that title or that label and, you know, carries their life that way. So I feel everybody needs an opportunity to be able to express themselves and all those things. But moving on. When while at this job, I had one particular circumstance come up where 2 months in, I went in initially to be an assistant supervisor over all the casework and was told I wasn't qualified because I didn't have a college degree. So I thought nothing of it. Okay, I'm not going to be stopped. I'm very resilient, relentless, all the things. And so 2 months in, they realized, oh, wow, this girl is excellent with communication and all these other things. We think that she absolutely can take on this job. And so they offered it to me 2 months after telling me I couldn't have it. And I took it. And they changed the nature of the hiring process based on the way I came into the position. They realized the training wasn't as necessary. But before they made the change, there was one exchange where one of the older white women had come to me and said, you know, well, I'm going to be able to take you through the training or what have you. And I very politely let her know, I appreciate that, but that won't be necessary. You know, I'm very clear on what needs to be done and I'm golden. She perceived that, however she did, I'm not even going to pretend that I understood how she processed it. But from that moment on, I became the oddball out. And that is when I started to experience things differently. You know, like people were coming in thinking they had to make me better. And when they realized they didn't have any part in that, I was beginning to be treated like I was much lesser. And initially you would think, oh, but that doesn't really suggest that that's how they were treating you because you were Black. But as I started to come across, you know, the other Black women that, and it was very few of us, I'm talking 4 out of hundreds of people at this organization. They were telling me that they had similar experiences and others that also made it abundantly clear to them that if you're competent here, or even more so, you know, you are quickly alienated. And so that was how I learned a great deal about how the experiences were different from Black woman to Black woman, Black man, and, you know, depending on all of these things, you know, weighing heavily, you know, on your opportunities. So I walk into the space aware that I am who I am and knowing that being Black is just a part of my identity. But there are spaces you come into where people are intent on making you hyper aware of the fact that you're Black in this space. And that also colors their perception and weighs heavily on what opportunities they feel like you can or can't handle. And so it becomes, again, you know, another tangled web of this is what's happening with this Black person or that one, and why we can't just assume that this person being angry about their experience is wrong, or me being able to be more understanding and quick to process and to take all the data in before I jump to a conclusion. That's what's happening. And because people don't make room for those differences or how bad the experience may or may not have been, that's what causes issues.
And so just to make sure I really understand that, you were not necessarily saying that that happened to you because you're Black, but you're also not necessarily saying that being Black contributed to it.
Yes. And it, again, I was blind. Initially, I was just thinking maybe she's just irritated with the fact that, you know, she doesn't get to say, well, I trained her to do well. It wasn't until I started having discussions with others that my eyes were open. And I was like, are people really like that? That's the honest to God truth. I really did not believe that that's what the situation was. But over time, as new Black women were coming in, and even as I was on my way out, it was apparent that that was the driving factor behind it.
Yeah. So one thing I was curious about, this is just a random question, by the way, Dre and Candace, do you feel like some of the portrayals in media, so like a TV show or a movie, do you feel like some of what you're seeing there is an accurate representation? So recently I was watching with my nephew, we were binge watching on Netflix. I think it's called All American. And just like to that question of being the only Black person in the room or the only Black person at school, some of the experiences that they portray on shows like that, do you feel like that's accurate or do you feel like it's exaggerated?
Well, I think, of course, if it's on TV or something like Netflix or a movie, of course, there's going to be some dramatization because that helps, you know, sell the show and it gets it, makes it more entertaining. But secondly, those shows are not all exactly the same. So I'm not sure we can paint with such a broad brush all of them in general. And as far as just in the media overall, right now, that's the, right now, this is the wave. Right now, the wave is, and I understand, Adrian and Charmaine, you two wanting to have this conversation, because right now, I made a joke about this last summer. Like, the worst thing to be right now is a white man. Right? You don't want to be in that position because you can't win. All right. At least you two can pull the female card. All right. Candace has the perfect mix. She's black and female. All right. I'm halfway there. But the worst thing to be is a white man right now, because anything can get thrown at you. You have no recourse to anything. So yeah, I think to answer your question, things get dramatized. And again, every show is a little bit different. And at the same time with people, again, this is, I think, something that has come up again in the question here. Everybody's not the same. Not all black people are the same. Not every black experience is the same. Like Candace just told you her experience and I told you mine, but there are black people out there they're 35 years old, never really been around white people like that. They would be uncomfortable just being in this room right now. So it really just depends on who the person is. I know that's not the best answer, but I have to make sure I'm putting that out there because Candace and I aren't representative of the entire black community, because we have diverse experiences and we're entrepreneurs, and there are a lot of black people who are neither.
Very fair.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And you made me laugh, Dre, because when people hear I'm from a certain part of, like Mesa, Arizona, or I used to live in Boise, Idaho, they'll ask me, do you know so-and-so? Do you know so-and-so? Again, like we paint those broad brushes and I'm going, no, I don't know who you're talking about. It's a big city.
Here's the next thing. What, if anything, should I understand about reparations?
That's right. I went there. This is a question that I have been thinking about and wanting to ask about for quite a while now. And I felt like, what better group to ask than this one? This is a safe environment. These are really smart people. So it gave us an opportunity to actually explore it together.
When I look at hiring for BizTalk Mastermind or anything else I do, one of the things that I get concerned about is I hire a black person, and now with this hot topic, there may be a discussion around reparation. And I don't know what to say about it. I don't really understand it. I'm not sure if I am over-exaggerating this in my mind, but from what I have seen out there, it's all over the place still. So not sure who wants to take this one first. I'm going to mute and listen.
Candace is taking this one.
He just told me.
Throwing Candace under the bus.
It's like, give Candace the hard stuff. No, I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, so again, Charlene, you know, as the leader, you're going to have to determine what conversations you're going to be open to and what you're not. You know, and here's the other side. This is what I teach so many leaders, entrepreneurs, in any capacity to do. You can own that you don't know. You know, a lot of us feel like we have to come to every conversation, every single problem with this deep sense of knowing and being sage. And let me tell you, some of my favorite words in the world are, I don't know, but I'm going to find out.
Candace, I need to challenge that a little bit. Are you sure that I get to say I don't know? Because in this particular topic, the message is clear that I should know. And I need to take a stance on it, and then I need to take action. So I'm not sure I get to say I don't know.
And I'll challenge you right back on that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know and you choose not to find out, that is a whole issue in itself, okay. Right? That's something fair. That reflects on what you deem is important to dedicate that time to. And that's something that you have to work out in your character or do skill building around as you see fit. If you go into every situation projecting that I don't get to, that is exactly what you will default to every time. And you don't get to set the standard. So for example, when my students come into my academy and again, they're learning their leadership skills, marketing, communication, sales, all of these things are what involve a great deal of influence and being able to handle objections or things of this nature, right? If you don't give yourself permission to go into something saying, I don't know, but I'm either committed to finding out or I'm not, how do you arrive to any position with anyone that you're trying to connect with?
Good point.
You know, that, again, that's your decision to make, and thinking that you have to be ready for every single person and every single interaction just breeds more fear and frustration and avoidance and all the other things that come behind self-preservation, right?
And now it could be actually encouraging that, like Dre said earlier, if I come in with that mindset, that's exactly what I'm going to get.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so letting someone know, you know, though this has come up and I'm unaware, and clearly at this point, you're not going to be unaware. Okay.
Right.
You're having this discussion. And so again, now you may be projecting based on what you've heard people, well, you should know. Okay. Well, you're telling me that I should know. And now that we've arrived to the fact that I don't, now what? Because that's a sign of someone else's character. If that's like being a terrorist, okay? Or, you know, there's a lot of people that you'll hear, let me use an analogy, like in the world of veganism, you know, you're a chef, you're doing your thing on social media, and then you get this barrage of comments from people like, you're an animal killer, and you need to die, and all these things, and you're sitting there like, what? Like, you can't come into someone else's space and just dictate, okay? Oh, not even dictate, but demand that they do things the way that you want them to. That takes away our freedom and a number of other things. So that would be the conversation that you would be having on the spot first and foremost. It's like, if you want to have a discussion with me about it, now we can sit down and talk. And you as the leader have to set the tone and the pace for that. Here's what we're going to talk about. I'm unaware of this, but considering that this is of interest to not just you or maybe multiple people here in the office, I'm gonna pull up some information and learn. Again, you're on the back end of that, so you won't have to worry about that now. But again, you can't go into the conversation thinking, I'm not allowed to. It just continues to breathe that. Okay, everyone is allowed to arrive to their own conclusions about things, and some people are on different journeys. There is a distinct difference from someone. And let's get back to the topic of race, you know, because that's something that feels very touchy for everybody, regardless of what people think. You know, Black people, this is touchy for us too sometimes. Like, damn it, man, you know, I don't want to talk about this. I want to just get past. We all have the moments, right? You know, so in that
human moments,
right? In that respect, with what's happening as a collective, you gotta look at the timing, right? The pandemic happened, then George Floyd, and now everything feels like it's on fire. Everybody's, go ahead, you were saying?
And I'm sorry, you're really sparking, you and I are playing off the empath thing because you're in my head, you're really sparking the realization in having this conversation that, and I'm not speaking for Adrian here, but for me, it is a lot of defensiveness. Mm-hmm. And I'm over here on one hand saying, there's a lot of hate in the world. There's a lot of anger. We need to just calm down. But what am I doing in my head? My dialogue, defense, be prepared to fight. And you're really outlining that for me in a very clear way. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad that I can be of help in any capacity. And so, you know, again, it's at its core. I'm trying to preserve myself. I'm trying to make sure that every single action I take is not something that is going to be perceived the wrong way, and living like that feels like prison. And it's also why a lot of people are avoiding getting educated. Because the more you know, the more you feel responsible, and it continues to perpetuate all these other emotions. And the way around it is to deal with the emotion that comes up. And essentially to go, you know what? This is what came up topically in this moment. I am not holding myself to a ridiculous standard of taking in 400 plus years of information and the Black experience. You can't.
Yeah.
You just cannot. And so embracing that, and that you don't have to live in light of the fear and, you know, all the projections and the I must know, creates a space where you can experience where someone else is coming from, and then you can tell them, honestly, this is where I'm coming from. And that's what breeds connection. That's what builds respect. The issue that a lot of people are having is that there's been a lot of information passed around and people haven't been taking initiative to learn anything. And they may be continuing to contribute to this fire that's been stoked at a whole new level because they're not getting any information at all about anything. You know, and again, it's very hard to learn when you don't feel safe. That's the truth.
Very fair. Incredible.
You know, it makes sense, but you know, it's all the things, and it's being willing to say, I didn't know. And now that I am aware, here are the actions I'm going to take. That's really what people want to see, more than just, you know, well, you know everything and you're the best at handling all of it.
Very fair. Dre, as a refresher, the question is, what, if anything, should I be aware of as an entrepreneur in hiring? Do I need to know about reparation?
Well, the general answer up front is, again, it depends on the person, because I don't even think about it. I don't think about reparations until you brought it up. So the general concept is, I guess is what you're asking. General concept is, since Black people were slaves and this was unpaid labor and it helped build up some wealth ostensibly for people in the South at the time of slavery, there are Black people who believe to this very day that Black people in general, the descendants of those slaves, should be given something by the government as, you know, repayment for the unpaid labor that was done centuries back. So the concept has always been around. It's not a new thing, because there's a guy named Spike Lee who's a movie producer. His company is called 40 Acres and a Mule. So that was essentially the offer that the government was supposed to give to every Black person, give everybody 40 acres of land and a mule as payment for the fact that they were slaves and we were brought here from Africa and all of that. So this is, again, is not a new concept. So this idea of reparations has always been an undertone of it for years. There's a video actually on YouTube. If you look it up, there's a guy named Ta-Nehisi Coates and another guy named Coleman Hughes. They actually both testified in front of, I think this was Congress. I always get it mixed up, but they both testified in front of Congress, and one was arguing that there should be reparations. Another one's arguing that there shouldn't. These are both Black men. And that video is on YouTube, and you can look that up. I can give you their names again in the chat. I'll do that. In the summer of 2020, when everything heated up, all it did, it basically just brought all that stuff back to the surface. So it's kind of like, you know, everyone here, I think, is in a relationship, or at least has been in a relationship, and things kind of bubble under the surface. And I'm a male, so I definitely can speak to this. Things with the female bubble under the surface, and you let it go, you let it go, you let it go. Then eventually something happens, and then you just throw all the stuff that you've been holding on to for the last 3 weeks. That's kind of how the reparation conversation came back to the surface in the summer of 2020, because, again, it's not new. It's just now people are like, okay, now this thing happened. All right, you know, let's bring up all this other stuff that we've been talking about, but nobody has addressed yet. So my answer when it comes to reparations, do I think is actually going to happen? No, I do not think the government, I mean, they can't even get it. They can't even give out $2,000 stimulus checks. So seriously, how are they going to give everybody 40 acres and a mule? I don't think reparations is actually going to happen, but I'm not like, I don't say to a Black person, hey, you know, you should stop going after it. If somebody came to me and said, hey, Dre, we're about to go protest for reparations, I'm saying I'm not going, but if you are able to make that happen, I'll take the check and deposit it. But so I'm not putting my time into going after it, but I understand people who believe that this is their, you know, their birthright by being descendants of slaves, that the government should pay back. But listen, the government is very, very much in debt. I don't think that's going to happen. So that's my general idea when it comes to reparations. But I think as far as the deeper conversation on it, Candace hit the nail on the head. I don't need to add anything to that.
That was and actually, Dre, I want to thank you for filling in some gaps. I did have a gap in my understanding of that, a couple of them. And I will share with you where the gaps were, just to come full circle on this one question. The gaps were that I understood that there was, you know, slavery and reparations somewhere with the government. My impression was that the general discussion was that white people of this present day now should take money out of their own pocket and hand it to the next Black guy that they know, or Black woman that they know. And so that's where it got ugly. And I didn't understand the actual facts there. And as Candace said, I actually didn't go out of my way to educate myself on it either until today. So thank you for filling that in for me.
Well, there are people of color who think that too, Charlene. Like I said, it's a wide group. There's a lot of people out there. There are people who do feel, hey, you're white, I'm black, your ascendants, your ancestors rather, were slave owners. My ancestors were slaves, so you owe me something. There are people who do feel that way. They may not say it in so many words and may not say it so explicitly, but there are people who do believe that.
No, that's valid, because especially as we proceed here, it's observations like that that isn't at the point of this discussion, that it's not just the four of us. If we all agree that this is safe when we're done, then we get it out there. And the encouragement is that other people might have these kind of observations and epiphanies too, from all four sides. All right, so here's the next question, because I have never been able to ask this. I'm actually kind of excited. What is the deal with Black women hair? And I have heard Black men and women make a thing of it. So what is this about? Please, it's just wide open question from Dre as a man and from Candace as a woman, both of you Black, help me understand this.
I have nothing on this, Candace.
The day we made Dre Baldwin speechless.
Oh, Miss Monroe. Okay. So let's have this discussion around hair. Okay. You know, for a long time, and even currently, you know, if you did not know, legislature had to be passed over the past few years in different areas here in the states that would not continue to perpetuate the narrative that Black women wearing their hair in its natural state was unprofessional.
Wait, there had to be legislation about that?
Yes.
No kidding.
Let's just start there, okay?
Okay.
You know, so for many years, you know, when you go back into the history of slavery, we have had a great deal of our features put down, be claimed as unacceptable, you know, deemed unkempt. And the truth is, when you think of how slavery started and what have you, you know, we were separated from a lot of the different processes and traditions and ways that we had as a culture for caring for our hair, only to be called unkempt and what have you, because it was being compared to a white beauty standard or a standard of beauty that was acceptable amongst whites and what have you. You know, we're told that our hair is, you know, our hair doesn't grow and it doesn't do this and it looks like that. And all of these things have attacked, you know, something that we're absolutely not in control of. And so when you think of that, additional to us having this shift, like right around 2006, 2007 was when the natural hair movement kind of exploded and took off, where women were starting to shed this identity of that we had to have our hair chemically relaxed or maintained or straightened, you know, in order to be accepted or acceptable on the job or seen as professional, what have you, you know. And you look at some of the things that have happened in pop culture, you know, Julia Rancic had, you know, her day in the sun where she was attacked because she referred to Zendaya wearing locks on a red carpet at, you know, she probably smells like patchouli and smokes weed. And so there's all of these associations that have been made for us about something that we're absolutely not in control of and is a part of our identity. So when you think about women in general, hair is a big deal. Imagine having that compound with being told over centuries that this isn't right, you don't belong and what have you. And then to some degree, even having the expression, like for example, you'll see a lot more women are embracing wigs of different colors and shapes and stuff. Like now it's a part of pop culture. When just, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you were Black and a woman and, you know, had come out of any particular environment, you know, you would be laughed at and mocked and called ghetto and all of these different things and have them associated with your identity because you wore, hair of a specific color that was outside of the norm. So we'll be here another 3 hours, but to spare everybody,
yeah, to
make it brief, that is the whole deal behind our hair. And so there's a great deal of inappropriate standards and women being bullied, Black women that is being bullied and told they're not enough and really having to struggle with who they are at their core because someone else said, you don't fit here, you don't belong. And so that's why it becomes such a touchy issue. I'd probably say even more than reparations if we're gonna really go there, right?
It sounds like it. It does sound like it, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. And again, women are, you're dealing with the emotion of who you are and then your body changing. And there's a lot of standards for beauty that are rooted in white supremacy and a number of other things and us saying we're better than you because we have this and you don't.
Well, I have a confession for you guys. And actually, as a part of this editing process, I will pull up this picture. Up until last year, I had dreadlocks. I love dreadlocks. I am one of those white girls that love dreadlocks. I lived over in San Diego for a long time. I was on the beach every freaking day. I was surfing and I'm a dreadlock girl. Now that you have mentioned that, Candace, I am lucky that it never got to be such a thing. At the worst, people would assume that I'm dirty, which is so untrue for dreadlocks, just so untrue. But that was like the worst of it for me. I did not know there was legislation. So it got big enough that we had to talk about hair in our United States government. That is bizarre to me. So no wonder it's such a big deal. Okay.
Yeah, it's insane. Everything from wearing locks. And then, a lot of people even feel touchy about locks because that was something that came with a very specific culture that to some degree was hijacked. And it was made acceptable for a white person to do, but if a Black person does it, there's all these other things and ideals and connotations and, it's the term that I'm looking for, stereotypes that get assigned to that. Well, you're unprofessional or you're unkempt and all these other things. And so people feel very strongly, but, just like reparations, a moment ago you had made a comment about the separation between, being poor, you can't identify with, white counterparts who have had that kind of wealth that
was
passed down generationally. And here's what's behind that. Even if you didn't, it's the connection and all of the other things outside of wealth that you benefit from having that particular part of your identity as something that people would consider would make you better than someone in the Black community. And what I love about you, Charlene, is that you go a great deal to make that known. Well, I'm unaware of how this does this and how I don't, you don't associate yourself in those ways. However, again, it doesn't take away from all the other things that come behind it. The way you're going to be treated with locks versus the way I'm going to be treated with locks is two different ways. And it's the same thing with wealth. If more white people understood that weren't wealthy and didn't have all of these things, what's the term I'm looking for, associated with them, if they understood just how much alike they were with those of us who came up from the dirt just the same, then they would more readily be able to recognize the institutions and systems that uphold white supremacy and those who are wealthy, the 1% that get away with a lot of things that everyone else collectively could not.
Very interesting. So this comes down to actually not necessarily an assignment of white supremacy and racism. It sounds like it comes down to, can we just continue to facilitate these conversations because you may be defensive as a white person, assuming that I'm going to call you racist, but there are systemic issues here that I grew up with that you may not be aware of. Can you at least hear that? I think that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. The fact that we don't have the ears to listen or the eyes to see or even give someone a moment to get through the experience, that's what creates a lot of issues. And that's why everybody's like, well, I'm just going to self-preserve in this corner here.
Fair. All right, Dre, I'm going to give you another opportunity. Yeah, well, go
one
ahead.
One thing I can say about the hair, Charlene, is you said you had locks, and I want to definitely interested to hear what Candace has to say about this. But whenever I will come across a white person, or at least they look white, and they have locks, or they had cornrows or something like that, male.
No, mine were dreadlocks, like knotted ones.
Okay,
and then
dreadlocks.
COVID shut down. So. Yep.
But any of those hairstyles that traditionally come from people of color, when I see that on a white person, I immediately know that they probably can relate to me a little bit better, just on an unconscious level, without really? Even really thinking about it. Yes, because where'd you get that style from? Right, who'd you see that? Who'd you see doing that?
You know, that's Bob Marley. The actually, thing. I love his music.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A black guy, right? So that's what I'm thinking. If you have your hair like that, then I'm like, all right, I know she kind of gets it. I know she kind of sees it. She sees where I come from. Even if somebody is as pale as you look in your picture, Charlene, if you got dreadlocks, I already know that you kind of understand. It's on some level. I don't even know what you understand. I just know you understand. That's whereas at the same time, to be honest, Adrian, I couldn't see you with dreadlocks. I don't think you ever had them. Am I accurate?
You are accurate. Yeah, I couldn't pull it off. I would look terrible.
Yeah, and it's kind of like an unconscious thing that I can kind of tell even once I hear a person talk a little bit. And when you said that, it didn't surprise me, Charlene. I guess that's the best way for me to say it.
You know, that's interesting. So what happened there was COVID shut down, of course. We all lost access to our hair people. And so the amount of maintenance that goes into properly cared for locks wasn't available to me, which is why I wear bandanas all the time now. And believe me, I actually do have now extensions and that are going to come in very soon. So the reason I say that is because I did not think about it like that, but that's pretty cool. I really didn't think about the black implication at all. Honestly, I just like Bob Marley and there's a beach there. But what I will do now with right, that. So yeah.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
So even the bandana also, I haven't never even thought about it, but I think every time I've seen you had the bandana on or a hat on or something on your head, and you notice I do always as well. And the thing is, there are people of color who, if they weren't as evolved or as worldly as Candace and myself, they would see you, if they saw you with those locks or hearing you say the things that you're saying, they could very easily accuse you of appropriation. Oh, you're a white person, you like Bob Marley, so you think you could just go do what black people do. And this happens. This happens on social media every day these days. And I know, Adrian, maybe you've seen it. Candace, I'm sure you've seen it as well.
Good to know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this is why I'm driving home that point. Everything you said, Dre, the same. You know, I'd be like, oh, okay. She might be a little bit down. I can at least have a conversation with her. And I love that you said it that way, Dre. You said,
exactly.
You're thinking to yourself, okay, I may not know that this person understands everything or even has the ears and the eyes to see me, but I know that they have a different level of consciousness than someone else. And I have literally said that to myself too. So yeah,
wow. Absolutely. Eye-opening.
We might be amiss if we didn't talk briefly about other diversity issues too. And I don't know if Dre and Candace want to weigh in on this, but just like all of the gender, you know, differences out there and sexual preferences and how those also play a big part in, I think, a lot of the social unrest right now. I don't have a question specifically, but we haven't really talked about that side of it either. And I had an interesting conversation with one of my employees the other day. She is lesbian. And she said, you know, what's interesting about being lesbian is that other than the fact that she has short hair and a Subaru, you know, and I love that she can like joke around about stereotypes about that. But other than those two things, you know, you wouldn't know necessarily that she's lesbian. And so for her, she said she has to come out on a weekly basis almost to someone, either a stranger or some other person that's interacting with them. And I had never thought about that, obviously, because I'm a white, straight person, I'm not dealing with that. And so it has never crossed my mind, which is an interesting thing. But she was talking about how when she was a school teacher, it was very difficult because kids will be kids and ask some very awkward questions sometimes. And some parents are quite rude about all of that. But yet she was saying that working with me is a safe thing. She never feels judged. She feels loved and all of that. So I think that piece of diversity is also very complex in the workplace. And I would love any thoughts that you have. I don't have a question per se, but I felt like it was a missing piece in our conversation on diversity.
I love that you did that. And before Dre and Candace, whoever wants to jump in on that answer, I will also say that before we go back to you, I have some thoughts on that myself, and they may not be as popular as what could be expected of this particular topic. I have some concerns there that I would like on the record. Go ahead, whoever, Dre or Candace.
Well, the first thing I'll say is I don't have a lot of people in the LGBTQ community in my inner circle. I'm not sure anybody in my family, at least that is open about it that I know of, is LGBTQ, but I live in Miami. I used to live in South Beach, and there are plenty of people who are lesbian, gay, or whatever else who live in those areas. One thing in the Black community especially is it has always been a taboo. In the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, it's become more normal, and now you have so many more people coming out and saying that this is the way that I am, this is the way that I want to live, and it's becoming much more acceptable. But I mean, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, like, even if I was, I probably couldn't come out. I probably would have felt uncomfortable coming out, not because even my immediate family would have a problem with it, but where am I going to go? Who am I going to hang with? Who am I going to talk to? And in the community that I came from, I'll just speak for myself, it was not we used all those insults, the F words and the all kinds of words to insult people, even when we weren't actually talking about their sexuality. We just use those, we just throw those words out. It was just a normal thing for us. And because of that, I'm sure there were people who I was around growing up who were gay or lesbian, bisexual, who could not admit it. And they had to wait until they were in their 20s and their 30s to feel comfortable because they could go to an environment in which that was acceptable. And a thing that I'll even say in full transparency, Charlene, when I first came across you, I wouldn't have been surprised if you told me you were lesbian.
Yeah.
Just because I get that of a lot. Your presentation. Right. Because you wear the bandana and you seem like a person who's used to working with their hands, and you're comfortable with Black people, you're comfortable with males.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, yeah, she might be lesbian. And
fair, totally fair.
But yeah, and that's just what I've seen, just especially in the people of color community, is that even to this day, still in certain environments, you can't just walk around openly gay. You become a target.
Wow. Now, before you answer, Candace, I will say that, Dre, that clarified some things up here with the good old boys that I hang around with. The one thing that they have said, like, over the years, anytime gay comes up, is that the worst thing is to be a Black gay man. And I don't even know how these good old boys know that, but they just seem to know that you guys had it really rough on that. And so it's interesting to hear you actually acknowledge and say that. I didn't think to ask you that.
Well, if you listen to the music will tell you all you need to know about how gay people are perceived and the rappers are the leaders as far as the language. Like, my girlfriend jokes all the time. She'll say something and I'll have a rap lyric. Like, I have a dictionary of raps in my head because I listened to them so much growing up. And the lyrics, the funny thing is I listen to it so much, I don't think about what they're actually saying until I'm around somebody who I know is listening. Like, my mom is in the car. Or my girlfriend's in the car. My girlfriend's European. So she's in the car and she's hearing it. She doesn't really know what they're saying. Or someone who's never heard it before. And they're like, wait, what did he just say? And then I start explaining it to them. And it's almost funny to me when I explain it, because I'm like, damn, it's so violent. It's so misogynistic. It's so homophobic. And I'm like, wow. And it's ingrained in my mind. But like Candace said, that code switching. I can talk like in N-word if I'm talking to a bunch of N-words. Or I can talk to you all how I'm talking to you all. I can code switch easily because I have all of those dictionaries in my brain. It's almost like speaking two languages, seriously, even though it's just English. But I'll let Candace give her thoughts on this.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. My experience is a little different, though. One of my baby sisters, I have a ton of siblings. I'm the oldest of 10.
Wow.
And so Papa was a Rolling Stone, but moving on. Right. One of my baby sisters is a lesbian. And my mom engaged, while she's currently married to a man, she's had relationships. And this was part of my experience. You know, we didn't have that kind of language around gay people in my house. It wasn't something for them to be shunned for. So I am very, very hyper aware in a way most people aren't when I hear that kind of language or them being put down. And it's upsetting to me, just the same way I see it that's being done to Black people or anyone else. I am much more sensitive to those things than most are. So, you know, we didn't play that, you know, and I was all about hip hop back when I was in the projects and what have you. But I'm like Dre was saying, you know, you hear it and I'm like, oh, that song is off. Not listening to this person ever again in life, you know, and that's how I raised my daughter as well. You know, and my daughter is also an empath. And so, you know, the information we take in, the people we listen to, the choices we make, I'm a lot more conscious than most are. But yes, again, it goes back to what I was talking about before. You know, everybody's thinking, well, how do I make Black people feel great on the job? And it's like, treat them like people.
Yeah. Emotion. So even with the other diversity that Adrian just brought up, it's the same idea. They're still people.
That's it. You know, and so I'm glad you brought that up as well, Adrian. That's always my default. Like they shouldn't have to be defensive. They shouldn't feel like they have to hide it. They have a very specific partner. You know, I tend to set parameters with my team around, like, we are not at work to talk about sexual orientation or any of these other things. Mm-hmm. However, yeah, if we're on casual time, like, everybody should be able to be safe and feel that way in their skin when they're working with me. So if it's a conversation about partnership or family or what have you, and we're just chatting, fine. But to be having like full-on discussions about what's acceptable and what's not, everybody should have the right to choose whomever it is that they want to love and the life they want to live. And for that to be considered normal and treated as such. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is really important to me as well. It permeates everything. I don't want people to feel like this part of my identity doesn't belong in any environment that I'm around, and being able to have, you know, again, to set the standard with these types of things and policy and the way we bring people onto the team and the way we make room for how they communicate with us and the fact that everybody understands we are here to work, then we're good to go, you know? And so, yeah, I could go on and on and I won't, but that's where I stand on it as well. You know, they should have human rights, and, you know, those are things that I defend as well. But, you know, if that's not what we're discussing at the time or whatever the case may be, you know, if we're working, but, you know, in any other capacity, of course, they should absolutely feel free as they are to engage and to laugh or to joke, and nothing should be going on that's inappropriate in any capacity.
Fair. And here's my side of that, Adrian. Well, before I do that, Dre, just on a human level, I got to tell you that I'll share with all you, I'm actually a hardcore rocker. Hard rock and heavy metal is my jam. It's just the way I do it as a sensitive person like I am. I go to a live show and it is, for lack of a better phrase, a mind fuck. I mean, the lights, the music, the crowd, the feeling, everything, all the things all at once. It's fabulous. But I say that to say this, because I'm so passionate. Can you? Yeah. So because I'm so passionate about it, on occasion, I do forget that I'm in mixed company, such as my mother and my 80-year-old grandmother in the car. And I just have music going in the background and I hear Disturbed going on with Down with Sickness, going in his whole diatribe about women and mothers in particular. And I'm like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I'm going to need to go ahead and switch the station now. So like you, it's ingrained in my head. I don't think about the connotations of the lyrics. I get caught up in the energy of it. So I can relate to that completely.
Exactly. Exactly.
So on this topic, Adrian, you mentioned the LGBTQ community, and I'm so proud of myself. I finally remembered that. I confessed to Candace that before now, I just referred to them as the alphabet people, not to be offensive, but just because I couldn't remember the acronym. So here's the thing on that. While I do get that, and actually I really don't care who identifies as what, if you tell me that I need to call you Chandra, Queen of the Moon, and you are bisexual who prefers this and that, fine. That is what I will call you. I don't care on that. The concerns I have about that particular movement is the value assignments. So I think it's one thing in the workforce to be able to be welcomed and accepted for who you say you are. I am on board with that. What I am not on board with is because you get to do that, you now have to force or get to force your particular values on more conservative people in that workforce that have some really very ingrained, deep reasons they can't get on board with you. And I will call out a particular name, and I'm sure he will hear this. We've got someone in our group who lives in Israel. His name is Dan Weiss. He is Jewish. He has never said to us that he is Jewish, but he wears a thing on his head, and he is. Now, I am not going to assign any of this conversation to him, but if he was my employee and somebody came in from that community and said, I now need you, Dan, to value what I think, I know enough about that religion to know that it would make him incredibly uncomfortable. It would put him in a very awkward spot. So I would like to have a different conversation as we go. I'm just going to float this out here, that particular movement still needs some balancing acts there. It's one thing to be accepted. It's another thing to force other people to believe what you believe. That's not cool. So that's my stance in the matter. What do you think, Adrian?
This is an interesting topic because maybe Dre can tell from my picture. I don't know. But I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, aka Mormon. Yep. I did not grow up in this church. However, I selected this on my own. What I think is interesting about that is you could say the same thing about my religion that you did about being Jewish. I think for me, I have to remind myself often that what resonates about my religion with me is not necessarily those very devout conservative views. It's more about having an eternal perspective that, and acknowledging that I do not know and appreciate everything about the human experience and our progression through the afterlife, right? And having that perspective allows me to not be myopic in my view of other people. So to me, it is not bothersome to change the pronoun for a particular person, or what did you say? Call them the queen of something, something.
Queen of Mars. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cute. You know, if that's really what's going to make them feel seen, loved, and what I subscribe to, everyone around me is a child of God and I will respect them as such. And if that makes them feel like I'm a safe person for them, then I will do that. However, there are people inside of my religion that do not subscribe to that. You know, they are more devout. They are more hardline in the sand. And I deflect from that, if that makes sense. And, you know, I think there's other religions, Catholics too, that there's people that also feel that way. But there are those inside that don't subscribe to everything. That doesn't mean because I can't make sense of everything about my religion, I'm going to discard it all. I use it as a vehicle to make sense of the world around me and give people space to be who they are. And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, let them be wrong about me if they think I'm judging them. I'm not. They should get to know me, you know. I love them no matter what. But not everyone feels that way. And I do not feel burdened by that request. I ask for their grace as I mess up, if I mess up their pronoun or screw something up in that way. I hope they can see I'm trying. And that's all I care about at the end of the day.
I think that's fair. Now, as entrepreneurs on that, I do think that this particular situation is still not resolved. And it probably needs a lot more time, because while we are attracting diversity to our workforces, we're also attracting people who would not agree or be able to understand where an identity crisis or identity association or insert whatever the experience here is for each individual person, they would not be able to understand that. So for me, I will end up doing what I do. I would look at my team, my existing team first. I would know them just like I know you guys. And then I would be able to make sort of an intuitive, emotional decision on whether or not this hire can get the needs and fulfillment from this workplace or not. And I feel like it would be irresponsible of me to know that they cannot get those values met based on the existing team that I have and hire them anyway. That would be irresponsible. So this one for me, this is a bit of a hotter topic for me. I actually feel like in a lot of ways, this topic is harder personally on my emotional side
because I feel people so deeply than a conversation about skin color is. So it's interesting that it evolved to that point. So we are now 10 minutes away from the end of the meeting. Let's go ahead and have an open, any last minute thoughts, any takeaways, any aha moments for any of you guys, like anything. The floor is open.
I'll just wrap up by saying, I think Dre and Candace, you know, you did awesome. And mm-hmm. the resounding thing I'm hearing is just remember it's people first and everything else second. And let's just treat each other with respect. And that's the takeaway I'm hanging on to today.
Very fair. And Adrian, I also think that Candace made a great point about your marketing message too. You do get to put that out there in your message. You could just say it.
Yes, for sure.
For me, this has been a great conversation simply because it is really hard to have this kind of conversation with anybody these days, even amongst people of the same color, even amongst people of the same sexual orientations and identifications. People don't want to talk about it because everybody's so sensitive around it and you don't know how the other person thinks. And you're like, all right, let me make sure, let me ease into how I feel about this just in case, you know, just in case I'm stepping on something that I shouldn't be stepping on. So I really appreciate you two ladies, Adrian and Charlene, for even asking and being willing to ask about having this conversation. And also Candace, it's been great. I've actually learned listening to Candace talk about this here today. I'm really glad the four of us could come together and have a rational, respectful conversation around this topic, where it's hard to find four people who can do that these days.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Dre said too. You know, and Charlene, you know this. And initially when you called, you were asking about it. And I was like, oh, I hope you're ready because I might say some stuff that may ruffle some feathers. And I'm okay
with being
a feather ruffler, okay?
And you put it right out there. You owned it.
You know, and so just like Dre said, you know, and I let this be known when we initially talked that as long as everybody was open and willing to be vulnerable and talk about things that make us uncomfortable and things of this capacity, they really are hard because, you know, not a lot of people have the emotional intelligence or EQ, whatever it is that you want to call it, to open themselves up. And to say that, you know, it's like Dre was saying too, you know, we're not a monolith, you know, where everybody can't be defined in a very specific way. You know, Adrian shared that as well when she mentioned, you know, from the religion that she's embraced as a part of her life, it's the same thing with mine. You know, I am a Christian. However, I do not want to be grouped in those who are quick to say, well, this is what God says and everyone's going to hell, you know, and we just want to unpack that in this moment, you know? And so this is why it's important for everyone to understand nuance and to not force their beliefs. You know, Charlene, you mentioned that being a concern. That's something that I make abundantly clear with my team as well. You know, I feel everybody deserves the right to choose whichever direction it is. Like, if God was willing to give us that, who am I to tell you can't, right? Like,
I
look at the whole, you know, overview of things. But the conversation was amazing because there was room for me to express certain things and everybody had an opportunity to contribute, observe, go, wow, I never thought about this or I didn't understand that. And, you know, you, Charlene, even as you were moderating, just being willing to say, you know, I realize how I've contributed and maybe I didn't educate myself or I could have. And it's conversation and everybody being able to come to the table and say, I'm not sure of what's going to come of this, but I'm going to allow myself to do it. That creates this kind of change. If we start doing this more and more, then we really do build a solid society, if you will, that's tolerant. Versus everybody tolerating each other at work or at home or out in the street and in all these other capacities. And so this was great. I do believe it's going to help a lot of people open their minds in a way that they may have been shut off to in the past. And I'm looking forward to see how this trickles down into the way we market and the way we hire. I'm Adrian and Emily, excited to see how you continue to do that. In different communities and to see what comes of you just making the claim. This is what we believe and what we stand for and how we're going to move going forward. And either you're on board with it or not, and then allowing things to unfold. So this was great.
I love it. And from my point of view, there is one reason in my mind that I knew even going into this call that we could handle this. And the one reason is because we have something in common that not all of the world has. We are, in fact, hardcore entrepreneurs. That does make us different in our wiring and the way that we see things and our ability to process a large amount of information that enables us to have the power and the safety to create a space like this and have this kind of conversation. So going forward, I will say from a personal side that I will never forget this as a first step. What you guys brought to the table today and the ability for me to ask questions, to learn, to really actually understand and not feel even one little bit judged or misunderstood. I will take that to my grave. Now, in my opinion, that is what this Biz Talk Mastermind can do. That is what the rest of the group can do. And why not? We are wired to do this. I almost feel like it's kind of a responsibility to take up the action. And if we can be a contributing voice of love and understanding in a world that we cannot control, then I'm on board. I will show up every day for that. So I don't want to underestimate here at all how much I appreciate all three of you for coming to the table so authentically and so openly. And Adrian, you in particular, this little white Mormon teacher tutor girl had more spine and balls and courage to ask for this conversation than somebody I've seen in a long time. So you get massive credit from me for this. Thank you for this opportunity.
That was fun. All right. Thanks, Charlene.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Great. Really very much.
And thank you for having me. I appreciate this conversation.
Yes, yeah, same here.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Bye.
All right. Later.
That was an incredibly rewarding, very human experience. And I think it's a really nice example of how we can sometimes just hold back from our judgment, reach out to other people, seek to understand and not to antagonize. And at the end of the day, remember that we're all humans. We have the same needs. And that's a wrap. What are your thoughts? Please drop your comments in the comment section of wherever you listen to your podcast. I monitor each and every one personally. And if you know an entrepreneur who is changing the world, one person at a time, I don't care how big or small the business is, I would love to meet them. You can reach out to me, Charlene, Charlene, at hello@bizbiztalkmastermind.com. And if you are an entrepreneur who is craving community and peer-to-peer support for the lonely path that you are on, check us out at www.biztalkmastermind.com. That is BIZ talkmastermind.com. Catch you soon.